Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lab. Well, folks, we are at the finish line. It's the PGA Tour season finale. It's the LPGA Tour season finale, but also a lot of news to get to. Rex, you're in Sea Island. That is why I am also there in spirit wearing a Frederica hat, one of our favorite golf courses in the U.S. How's it going out there today at the RSM Classic?
I think we have some highlights coming to you from around yesterday with me and super producer Andrew Bradley at Frederica. It was quite the interesting round. Oh, there we go. Beautiful. Idyllic. If you've ever been, like, it is such a treat, a pleasure to play that golf course. And we ran out. We got out there late yesterday afternoon. And as Davis Love said in his press conference here at Sea Island, that you know the weather is perfect in this sort of corner of paradise when people start complaining about the sand gnats, the bugs. You know what they are. But folks,
Very prevalent.
Very much so. However, having spent a good amount of time in this area, including boot camp, Paris Island, just up the road a little bit, there are ways to fight it, and it's skin so soft. Consider that, write that down. Skin so soft. We'll keep the sand gnats away, whatever it is, the gnats away. But yeah, it was a very nice round. We've been having fun the last 2 days on Golf Today, making fun of you and your driver yips. The one person who does not have the driver yips would be super producer Andrew Bradley, who hit it like a tour player yesterday. That's on 18. You came to it a little bit late, but you get the idea. He just stripe showed all the way around. I think in 18 holes, he actually hit one drive that wasn't off the center of the club face. That is not driver yips.
I am unfamiliar with that feeling of hitting all but one fairway. Boy, I sure wish I could do that. Fervent listeners, Rex, of the pod will remember Andrew Bradley, who was a guest on last year's, I believe it was his year-end show, in which we asked him, what is your core memory from, I don't know, covering golf over the past 15 years? And Rex, his answer was, none immediately come to mind. I don't have one. And thus ended Andrew Bradley's podcast career. All right. Let's get into this because there is so much to get to. Let's start, Rex, with some news that we've had over the past 7 to 10 days since we've done the last podcast record. We have to first start with Justin Thomas, who announced last week that he had undergone back surgery. Said he actually had some nagging hip pain, got it checked out, and it turned out to be a disc. Underwent a microdiscectomy, if that procedure sounds familiar. That's the one that is made somewhat famous by Tiger Woods in recent years. Rex, the typical recovery period for a microdiscectomy is somewhere around 3 months. Every athlete is a little bit different, but we've already heard from Justin Thomas in his social media post. We've already heard from Jordan Spieth, who appeared on Golf Central earlier this week after talking to Justin Thomas, encouraging him not to rush it. How does this news, this back surgery news for Justin Thomas, how does that temper your expectations for his 2026?
It doesn't, because we have seen players who have had this surgery, including our very own Andrew Bradley, who had that exact same surgery, and we just showed that swing. Doesn't seem to be impacting him. Tiger Woods would be the outlier here, because that was one of, if I have the number right, 7 different back surgeries procedures, if I'm adding all of those up. So I think you have to take the cumulative effect when you have Tiger Woods in the discussion. I think Justin Thomas being relatively young, being in relatively good shape, and the fact of who he works with. He works with Kay Wayne, who is the same trainer who Tiger Woods works with. They have been through this. They know the psychology. They know the protocols they have to go through. Also, I had a chance to talk with Harris English this morning about JT, because if anybody knows about coming back from injury, Harris English had major hip surgery back in 2022. I mean, it could have been career-ending hip surgery, the things he was dealing with. And now he's playing on Ryder Cups. He's contending in majors. He's won on the PGA Tour since then. And he said what we always hear from professional athletes. No professional athlete has ever come back too late from an injury. Harris actually admitted, I came back too soon. I was out 6 months. And he goes, I just got sick and tired of sitting on the couch. Didn't want to miss another major. That's what you have to wrestle with. And I think more than anything, that'll be the one thing JT will struggle with. As you and I both know, he can be, what's the nicest way of saying that? A bit of a hardhead when it comes to these things.
He certainly can. He's already at least alluded to, at least talked about the need to take things slowly. He has already acknowledged that he's going to be missing some tournament starts in 2026. How many? I don't know. If you think about the typical 3 month recovery period, that would put him sort of late February. So, you know, a season wouldn't start in Sony. We're sort of unsure how many star players are going to turn up there anyway. We wouldn't see him in the desert. Likely would not see him in Phoenix. Likely would not see him at Riviera or Pebble Beach. And maybe, hopefully, optimistically, we see Justin Thomas somewhere close to full health around the Players Championship, certainly in time for the Masters. And so, yeah, you're missing a good chunk of the season. He's going to have to play catch up for things like the FedEx Cup race, trying to get to the Tour Championship, trying to make sure his game is informed for the major championships. We know how much he has struggled in those since winning the 2022 PGA. It certainly took me by surprise, because I think it took Justin Thomas by surprise. He did not anticipate at all having any sort of back issue. Again, he said it was nagging hip pain. If you look at the results, you know, Justin Thomas slowed down a little bit in July and August, wasn't quite in the same form that he has exhibited in spring. You sort of wonder now in hindsight how much that could be attributed to the hip pain, which eventually turned into a disc issue. But like, by all accounts, it was a very successful 2025 season for Justin Thomas. Won the RBC Heritage, signature event on the PGA Tour, among eight top tens, was picked for the Ryder Cup team once again, secured a pretty impressive Sunday singles match victory as well, that at least sort of kickstarted that American rally on Sunday. So no, like, there's so many potential landmines for injuries for PGA Tour players, right? Like hand, wrist, not good at all. Elbow, as you can see by my current driver, it's bad. Hip issues, as you have alluded to, also troubling. Harris English, Billy Horschel coming back from that now as well. I think about it as like a running back, where knees, Achilles, like those injuries, I think there's always a level of concern. Will I be back to the same level? Back is obviously scary. Justin Thomas has a great team around him. Look forward to getting him back on the PGA Tour very soon. Sausage fingers up, which means it's your turn.
No, you're right. This is one that always puts up alarm bells. I think technology, I think science, I think medicine has come along enough. I think we've seen enough players who have gone through this and come out the other side better, not just the same players they were before. You can become a better player, because Justin Thomas probably doesn't even realize that this injury has been lingering for a long time. And at some point, he finally had to start listening to his body. I did want to say this. You mentioned the driver. Yips. We've had fun with that the last 2 days since I was threatened with an HR complaint. I just wanted to go make it public that I apologize. I didn't mean to use those words as directed to my colleague, Ryan Lavner. That's going to be my only statement on this. Please respect my privacy.
Yes, this actually could be Rex's final episode once he's called into the principal's office. He is questionable to return for Sunday's
facts.
Show.
It's just facts.
Television. It is. I'm the first one to poke fun at my own golf game, which, of course, right now is dead. Some other news to get to, Rex. Victor Perez, who was actually in the field at the RSM Classic, was a Tuesday withdrawal because he has now joined LIV Golf. He'll be a member of Martin Keimer's Cliques team. Victor Perez, the tall Frenchman, 108th in the FedEx Cup points. So he was playing, Rex, at the RSM, the final event of the FedEx Cup fall, to hopefully become fully secure on the PGA Tour by getting inside the top 100. Even if the season had ended, he would have finished 108th. Likely would have gotten, I don't know, somewhere 20-ish events.
2025. 2026. That's a different category. 101 to 110.
Not going
to
get a reshuffle. Yeah. So he would have been in a good spot. Instead, decides to make the jump. Personal decision, moving to LIV Golf. Does this move the needle for you at all with Victor Perez leaving the PGA Tour to become a member of LIV?
I think for you and I and those of us in this business, of course it moves the needle. I mean, LIV Golf has spent the last two off seasons, I would argue, being pretty idle, not really making any major moves, either trying to pick up players or allowing players in via the promotions event. I'm not quite sure this is a name that's going to move the needle. We talk about this all the time. What's going to allow LIV Golf to take that next step to become a little bit more mainstream, specifically here in the United States? I don't think Victor Perez is that guy. I will tell you this anecdotally, as we mentioned, myself and super producer Andrew played Frederica yesterday. And as we were on the range getting ready, Tommy Gainey was on the range hitting golf balls. Of course, Tommy Gainey, the 2012 winner here at the RSM Classic. Tommy Gainey, who just won on the PGA Tour Champions last month at our friends, Furyk and Friends event. He was on the range and we were just having a casual conversation and he reaches into his phone and his eyes got big and he goes, huh,
"Whoops, I'm in."
I just got into the field and I was like, "Oh, who left?
Let's just go to the right-hander from the bullpen."
Who left was my question. Oh, who left? Not thinking like who drew was what I should have said, but who left? And he goes, "Victor Perez." I didn't realize how right I was when I asked that question.
Yep. Victor Perez now on LIV. I've talked a number of times that I think one of the strengths of the PGA Tour is how they regenerate stars, and I wouldn't say Victor Perez was a star, but he was sort of a rank and file player. He will be easily replaceable. I do think it helps LIV in terms of like depth. Another name player,
he's a good player,
multiple time winner on the European Tour, including a Rolex Series event. So if that's what he feel like he wanted to do, he's He's probably going to make more money on LIV than he would have won on the PGA Tour. So be it. We'll see Victor Perez on LIV beginning with the Saudi event in early February in 2026. Speaking of LIV, Rex, there was a little bit of a news as well. We touched on a little bit in the roundtable on Tuesday. Was Henrik Stenson, who is reportedly first reported by Bunker and then followed up by our friend James Corrigan of The Telegraph. He has had his fines paid that he was due to the DP World Tour, and he will be rejoining the European circuit. Now, James Corrigan did say that it'll be on the European Tour's terms because the Legends category, from which a Henrik Stenson, a Lee Westwood, a Ian Poulter, a Paul Casey, players of that ilk, the category that they would have been playing out of and thus been getting into some of the signature events, the elevated events, the Rolex Series events on the DP World Tour, that category has been diminished. And so, you know, he's probably going to need sponsor invites if he's going to be playing in the, I don't know, Scottish Opens and the Abu Dhabis of the world. What do you make of Henrik Stenson's move, who Stenson is going to be turning 50 next year? Remember a couple of years ago, he was stripped of the European Ryder Cup captaincy. What are you reading into this?
I think it's pretty clear, some of our comments, that Eamon Lynch scares both of us to death when we're on live TV because you don't know what he's going to ask. So I'm very hopeful that Eamon Lynch is not going to watch this podcast, because I will point to what is happening, just not with Henrik Stenson, but Laurie Cantor as well. You have a former player from LIV Golf who will play on the PGA Tour next year. That has not happened on a full-time basis. That's the pathway. And yep. Laurie Cantor stopped playing on the LIV Tour, played last season or this season on the DP World Tour, finished inside the top 10 and earned that exempt status onto the PGA Tour. It's a convoluted pathway. It's a long way to go to get to where you want, but we've been waiting a long time for this to try to see what could this possibly look like. And I'm not going to say that's going to happen with Henrik Stenson, because by all accounts, his performances on LIV Golf the last few years suggest his best golf is behind him. But again, the DP World Tour is the one that's out front on this particular issue, and it's probably easier for them and their memberships. I understand where you're coming from. Touch on one of the things you mentioned. Of course, every Rolex event is going to want Henrik Stenson in the field. He's still a name. He's still a draw. I could see this happening multiple times over the next few years where the Graham McDowells and the Lee Westwoods and the Ian Poulters fall off LIV Golf and just go back to the DP World Tour, who will be more than happy to embrace him with open arms. The other part of this conversation, which was very interesting, it came up over the last few days, is Henrik circle back around and get another chance as a European Ryder Cup captain? I don't think so, only because of what you and I have talked about in the past. I truly believe Luke Donald's going to get a third try in 2 years at Adair Manor. If I was the European Tour, I would be begging him right now, sending him flowers. Please, Guinness, please come captain again. We want you to keep captaining. So at some point, you kind of run out of slots, because at some point, you would look at Justin Rose. You would start looking at other players. Certainly, Rory's going to come in to the conversation. So I don't think that's happening, but it is compelling and it's interesting, because here is the pathway that we've been waiting for.
Yeah, and exactly. Like the punishments for DP World Tour players is obviously less penal than what we see on the PGA Tour. Like Stenson, I believe his fines was somewhere around £1 million. He's going to have to sit out 2 months, which if you look at the DP World Tour schedule, that's not going to be all that prohibitive for him as well. As long as you do those two checkpoints, like, you can rejoin the tour. You can apply for membership and play once again on the European circuit. A cynic, Rex, would say that, I think to your point, okay, you pay $1.5 million. All of a sudden, you're just trying to get into the good graces of the European Ryder Cup circuit again. You know, maybe there's an opening. Maybe he gets himself back into the team room at least for 2027 at Adair Manor. Who knows what's going to open it up? It's really hard for me to imagine, after the public embarrassment of Henrik Stenson saying, I'm not going to go to LIV, my full focus is on the European Ryder Cup team, and then having to be stripped of the captaincy. It's really hard for me to imagine a scenario in which he would be sort of the front-facing figure again. But I sure hope he's part of the backroom staff. I think he has a lot of knowledge to impart on the younger players. He's been there. He's done that. I think the same goes for Ian Poulter, a Lee Westwood, a Paul Casey,
Sergio Garcia,
a Graham McDowell. All of those players, I believe, in the future should be reincorporated, but it's really hard for me to see them being that front-facing figure for the European Ryder Cup team after these past couple years have gone.
No, and that's fair. And I think the part that just gives me hope, and should give every golf fan hope, is that we have been talking in circles about this for the last 3.5 years, essentially. And there has been no obvious pathway back. And certainly the powers that be on the PGA Tour side, they haven't been interested in creating a clear pathway. We kind of know based on what happened with Hudson Swafford, but that's still a lot of gray area involved there. What if Brooks Koepka's contract comes up at the end of next year, like we all think it will, and he decides not to? How in the world do you bring back Brooks Koepka? Because I would guess the PGA Tour would be motivated to do that. So I think this is only a good thing.
Yeah, and keep in mind, the arbitration case is still outstanding for a Tyrrell Hatton and a John Rahm. It was much, much more expeditious for the other players like Lee Westwood and Ian Poulter. There was a lot of thought that, you know, after the Ryder Cup, the case had been stayed for those two players. We have not yet heard when they are going to have that case heard for John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton, who are appealing the sanctions that DP World Tour has imposed on them. As I mentioned earlier, a big week for the LPGA, the season finale in Naples. Nelly Korda, who was a seven-time winner last year, still trying to get her first win in 2025, certainly a surprise. But one thing that I thought was really notable that came out this week, Rex, was the announcement from the LPGA that they are partnering with sponsor FM to get an investment to have some broadcast enhancements in 2026. What that's going to include is every tournament being shown live. No more tape delay, which always, you know, rankled fans, and for good reason. They're going to have more cameras, more opportunities, more storytelling, more walk and talks. Big picture, 30,000 foot. I don't need the nitty gritty details of what this deal is going to entail. Big picture, though, how significant do you think this is for the LPGA? Because to me, this was like one of the biggest moments, certainly of Craig Kessler's early tenure as commissioner, but could be hugely successful for the women's tour and trying to get some more exposure.
And I believe it's going to come with ShotLink at the events as well, if I read correctly, which kind of dovetails with some of the things that you and I have talked about in the past. Every professional event now should use ShotLink. That should be the standard. You don't have this in any other sport. Stats are stats in every other sport. So there's no reason. Look at the PGA Tour. It's proprietary. They've invested a lot of money. They deserve to get paid for it. But that's what the fans, not that I'm not talking about the media or the media partners, that's what the fans deserve. Something a little bit more in-depth than how many fairways did you hit. But I think you're absolutely right. This is a huge improvement over what the product was before. And there's a lot of ways to go. I'm not a fan of the walk and talk, but I think it could give the public an opportunity to meet these players, get to know these players a little bit better. You talk about the storytelling. That's one thing that you and I always seem to want to lean into. If you have this real estate, if you have the opportunity to take a little time and put a little air in the room and explain exactly why Nelly Korda is on this historic pace, or maybe why she's struggling this year and not winning like she did last year, I think it's only good for the product.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And there's always been like this chicken and egg argument when it relates to the LPGA, because some fans will look at the ratings and be like, see, there's not an appetite for this. There's not an audience for this. But is there not an audience for this because some of the tournaments are on tape delay, or some of the tournaments are overseas, or some of the tournaments are not on broadcast television? This is a great way to sort of show what the appetite and what the audience is, because having more cameras is huge. It's going to dramatically improve and increase the pacing of the broadcast. If you watch an LPGA telecast, Rex, like it's much more aligned with what I would call like Korn Ferry Tour coverage as opposed to the PGA Tour. Typically on a Korn Ferry Tour coverage, because there are fewer cameras, because there is less production staff, you sort of hone in on one or two groups and you sort of watch like their entire routine, and it could just seem a little bit slow, a little bit tedious. Having more cameras, 50% more cameras, I believe, was the statistic. You're going to be bouncing around to players more often. You're going to introduce the audience to more players. You mentioned the ShotLink camera. I think that's huge as well, because now we can finally contextualize what these players are doing, not just to our own numbers, which are obviously paltry and mediocre and a little bit pathetic, but also how does that relate to PGA Tour players? It just better contextualizes. To me, it's a massive win early for Craig Kessler, and a great easy way with this investment opportunity from FM to increase the exposure for the tour and just see, can this really help boost the reach and the audience for this circuit?
And there is sort of the hidden trap door on this that probably no one wants to get into, but the reason the PGA Tour invested so much money in those ShotLink cameras, and it took them years to come up with something that was as close to foolproof that was going to work. I think the threshold was 98% correct or something along those lines. Like, it had to be almost perfect. There's only one reason why it needed to be 98 or 99% correct, and that's for gambling purposes. And if anything is going to move the needle in any sport, I don't care if it's the NFL or the LPGA Tour, It's going to be gambling because the degenerates love to pay attention to something they have action on.
Great point. How about the PGA Tour season finale? Certainly, you look at the various races that are going on. I mean, it is a glorious day. Remember the Mackenzie Hughes win a couple years ago? It was practically a chance of snow.
No one wants to see me. I'll just move out of the live shot.
It's 80 degrees. It's beautifully sunny. Light breezes. Just idyllic weather in CLN. Not just right now pre-tournament, but also expected through the tournament days. Great. Great to see because it can be so difficult. But Rex, like, what is the feeling on the ground? It's a sleepy coastal town. You know, there's not a whole lot going on. A lot of vacationers there. Do you feel the tension? A lot was made. We've been talking for literally 11 months about this move from 125-100. The sort of underscoring the point that the PGA Tour has gotten more cutthroat. Do you actually feel that vibe now that we have reached the finish line and they actually are really making this start cutoff?
My report I did on Golf Today, I just wanted to touch on the various bubbles. And they're a little bit more nuanced than I think most people realize. And I think they're a little bit more nuanced than what we usually say when it's live and on air. Like, you don't have a lot of time to explain it. But certainly we're talking about that top 100 down from 125. You want to look into the guys who are trying to keep their job. But I kind of took a little bit deeper dive and looked at the various bubbles. 100 is one of them, but you also have number 51 through 60. Those players who finished in the fall points list, they are going to get into the first two signature events starting next season. That's big.
And that's big.
I use this as an example. Ben Griffin played well last fall, got into those first two signature events, and went on to have a career year, just a breakout year. Three PGA Tour victories, made it to the Ryder Cup, everything he did there. That's compelling in my mind. And there's also sort of this inside baseball idea that there are going to be separate categories after that 100. So it's going to be 101 to 110 is going to be a separate category from the fall points list. And that's important because, number one, they won't reshuffle. So it doesn't matter if you don't play great to start the year. You're not going to start losing status. That's big. And according to most players I talk to, they imagine they're going to get 20, maybe 25 starts next year. Now, they're not going to be in the signature events or the majors or the Players Championship. But if you have 20 to 25 event starts, I think most guys on that range over there will tell you that's good enough. If I can't get it done in 20 or 25 events, that's good enough. All that being said, I was a little surprised, and again, I'm going to tease this, and I would strongly recommend everyone go and listen to my report, not because of what I said, but what the players said. Mackenzie Hughes, I asked about it. He's sort of vying for that 51 to 60 spot right now. He's at 48, I believe. He made it clear, I'm not happy with the new system. I don't like having fewer cards. Justin Lauer, who was on the outside of that 110 spot. I think he's 118 on the fall points list. He clearly wasn't happy. Bo Hostler, who's just outside, I think he's 108. So he's outside that top 100 number. He clearly is not happening. And this isn't about you're just setting arbitrary numbers. This is just about the PGA Tour has made a conscious decision to do something that almost every other sport is not doing. And that's contract. You're going to have fewer and fewer playing opportunities. Everyone can see the upside. We all know what Brian Rolapp is angling for here. He wants an elite product that brings the best players to the best courses on a more limited basis than what we have right now. I can see that as a positive business model. However, now that this week you have those numbers adding up to real life consequences, this isn't hypothetical anymore. This is real life consequences. I think everybody is taking a really hard look to answer your question. And yeah, man, it's tense here.
But don't you think, Rex, with those various checkpoints that you mentioned and sort of the 101 to 110 range, don't you think, you know, it's not quite what we thought last year? Like, we thought it was going to be dropping off a cliff, right? Like, once you get to 100, everyone else, all of a sudden you're fending for yourself on the Korn Ferry Tour. If you finish outside that number, maybe you're going back to Q school. You know, maybe you're back to the PGA Tour Americas. It seemed at the time really stark, really dire, really cutthroat. They're still offering a pretty sizable raft here for players. I mean, 20 starts is a lot. Are you going to have to play some pretty serious stretches? Yeah, I think you would. But if you want to be on the PGA Tour and you want to have access to millions and millions of dollars, you're going to do whatever it takes. You look at the players who are going to be finishing inside the top 100. It's not like they're playing significantly more than 100 tournaments. Sure, you have some Iron Men, you know, the Adam Shanks of the world, the Max Gracemans of the world who are Ironmen, and they're going to be playing nearly every single week. The Brian Campbells, who played nearly every single week on the PGA Tour. But the majority of players, Rex, are somewhere in that like 22 to 27 event range if you're a fully exempt member on the PGA Tour. It still seems like a pretty good spot, in my opinion, 101 to 110. Plus, you know, the dozen or so events that you're getting in that other conditional category.
Couple things, and you like to skip past these, so I always have to circle back around and make sure that it's worth pointing out. I guess where I would counter with the argument that the difference between the guy that finishes 110 and the guy that finishes 111 is going to be dramatic. It could be 10.
Yeah, probably 12, probably half
12
as,
events.
Half as, 12 half events. As many starts.
And like, look, it's a number. You have to set a number. I'm not sitting making the argument that maybe it needs to be a little bit more tiered, maybe would be the way I would put it. But it is going to be dramatic. Like, I know you're looking for real life consequences. Well, that's going to be real life consequences. You go from 20 or 25 starts to 10 or 15. That's a pretty big difference. Like, at 10's probably not enough. I mean, you're going to have one really good week. You're going to have, probably have to have a career week to pull that off. And I think most players will tell you that, look, if I don't finish inside the number, that's entirely on me. I think where the hang up is right now is you have the have and the have nots. And there is such a distinct hard line between those players who are in the signature events and those who are not, that it's only going to be increasingly more difficult to play your way in. You see a handful of players do it. And like, we've gone through this now basically for 2 years now, and you can do it, but it's really difficult.
You make a great point that the PGA Tour is doing something that every other sport is not doing. By contracting, every other sport is looking into expansion. Where I would counter what the PGA Tour is doing that is different than other sports is that they're still offering these lifelines. You look at the other sports, there is a very clear delineation. There is a very clear relegation. Just because the Atlanta Falcons, Rex, have now Michael Penix out for the season and Drake London more than likely out for the season, and they're currently 3-7, all of a sudden you don't just have, well, they've had some injuries, so they're not going to, you know, they're going to miss the playoffs. Well, let's give them a higher draft seed, you know, just to even things out. It's very clear line. They miss the playoffs, and this is the punishment that they receive. There's still, I still think, a little bit of a safety net for PGA Tour players who have been unproductive in the season. That's all I'm saying. I still think there are opportunities for those players to earn their way back onto the tour.
Absolutely.
Time, not just in 2026 with the Aeon Swing 5 and the next 10 and all that. But also just playing enough starts to get to 2027 full status.
And that's a good point. And just to put a bow on this, and I do want to circle back around. And look, Jordan Spieth went on Golf Today and spoke with our very own Damon Hack. And it was an interesting conversation. He's been dealing with some injuries. He certainly has put himself through the rigors in the fall. He's on the outside of that 60 mark. He could have played once or twice in the fall and tried to play his way into that 51 to 60. And we've had this conversation a lot. And sort of the expectation, I talked to a tour official about this week, and it's like, okay, those first two events are AT&T Pebble Beach, a longtime sponsor of Jordan Spieth, and the Genesis Invitational. Tiger Woods, you know he's going to get in there. That's all well and good. It's a really bad look to the players who are here and have played all fall and trying to get into that 51 to 60 mark. And you have guys that decided that they weren't going to do it. Not to pick on Jordan, but he's the best example.
Don't have sponsor exemptions then. We just talked about Trump last week. Everyone was up in arms about her sponsor exemption.
You crushed that, by the way. I was very impressed with your take on that. Very well done. Yes.
Thank you. For the LPGA event, we talk about the signature event sponsor exemptions. Just don't have them, and you would not have this issue. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. As a reminder, Rex, we have a made-for-TV linear episode. We'll be recording on Sunday night. It's going to be hitting your televisions on Monday, November 24th. Full recap of the RSM. We'll be putting a bow on the entire PGA Tour season. Some highlights, some superlatives. That should be a lot of fun, as well as touching on any other news that we have missed over the past week or so. That is going to be our penultimate episode for linear television. The other one, Rex, will be on Monday, December 8th. That is going to be our season finale, looking at the year in its entirety, every tour, every player, what really stood out, our best memories from the year. Looking forward to doing that one for sure. In the meantime, if you guys want to be a part of the show, if you have some listener questions, hit us up in the YouTube comment section. Hope to have time to get to a few of those. We always love getting to those in the show. It's always a lot of fun. In the meantime, you guys know the drill. www.golfchannel.com. We're back and just might be better than ever. In the meantime, look forward to talking to you guys on Sunday night with a recap from the RSM and everything else. Thanks for listening. Thanks for support. Have a great rest of your week.
Why is it my problem? You have a driver here.